like a shul on what exactly?
Can you be a good Jew in Chutz La'aretz? Okay. So, the simple answer, before I get into any of halachot, and there's a Mar Makomot if anyone wants to look, the simple answer would be, well, it depends what you consider a good Jew. You know? Can you be a good Jew and not learn Torah? What?
Okay, no.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. Torah, learning Torah, is one of the mitzvot that Shkula Keneged Kol Mitzvot. That's considered equivalent. Are you with us? Okay, so could you just shut the Gemara? Thanks. Learning Torah is considered equal to all the mitzvot put together. So is living in Eretz Yisrael. So they must be considered big mitzvot. So can you be a good Jew and not learn Torah? Maybe. So can you be a good Jew and not live in Eretz Yisrael? Maybe. Certainly not an ideal. Okay. So let's see some sources. The Gemara Ketubot.
Is it possible to say that one of them like a definition and one like learning Torah like being the definition of being a Jew? One of them like. Not the definition, but they look like.
Maybe.
It's much more needed in order to be like Jewish, if you could say that.
Possibly.
So why do they say Derech Eretz Kama La Torah? Why do they say?
Derech Eretz is like, the Vilna Gaon's got a beautiful explanation. Torah is like water. So if, let's say, I have a beautiful garden that I've been tending to and I water it, it'll get even better. If, however, I let the garden, go to pot and it's like weeds and go, and I water it, there'll just be more weeds and more bad things there. So before you learn Torah, first develop your midot. Then when you learn Torah, you'll be even better. If on the other hand you didn't develop your midot, when you learn Torah, if you were arrogant before, you'll be more arrogant because now I also know more than the next guy. So it'll just make matters worse. So I'm saying, Torah is a very big deal. Absolutely, it's one of the most important mitzvot. We say it's Shkula Kenega Kol Mitzvot. But so is living in Eretz Israel. So I'm just saying, we have this idea, it's optional. Who says optional? Okay, here's the Gemara. The Gemara Ketubot, Kuf Yud Amid Bet, is the first source on the page, says, La'olam Yidur, the Eretz Israel, a person should live in Eretz Israel, even in a city where the majority of the people are idol worshippers, rather than to live in Chutz La'aretz, where the majority of the people are nice from Jews. So let's assume for, I don't know, argument's sake, you live in, Beit Lechem, surrounded by Christians who visit, the birthplace of Jesus. Says the Gemara, better to live there than to live in Muncie and Borough Park and all these places where there's from Jews all over the place. The Gemara continues and says, whoever lives in Eretz Israel, it's like you have a God. Right? Whoever lives in Chutz La'aretz, it's like you don't have a God. That's pretty strong language. And it goes one more thing and says, as a husband, I could force my wife to move to Eretz Yisrael. If she refuses, I could say, okay, you forfeit your rights to the Ksuba. And I cannot force her to leave Eretz Yisrael and go to Chutz La'aretz. She wants to stay in Israel. I have to award her the Ksuba and divorce her, and vice versa. She's allowed to force me to make Aliyah, and she cannot force me to make Yerida. Okay? So all of this is Paskin Lahalacha in the Rambam. So now the question is, so where's the source? Where do we get this from? So the next source on the page, that's why I'm not doing anything inside now because I would run out of time, but I'm giving you the page for those who want to look at it. The next source on the page, it's a Pasuk. This we can read, it's pretty short. Pasuk at Parshat Matot. Okay, Lama Gimel Nun Gimel, V'arashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba. You should conquer the land and settle it. I have given this land for you to inhabit. Okay? Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, conquer the land, settle the land. Says the Ramban, that's the next source. The Ramban says this is a mitzvat aseh. Okay, it's a positive commandment that we need to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban al HaTorah, not over here in Sefer Mitzvot, but on al HaTorah, he actually is more lengthy, and he says this is this is a mitzvah to say. In the Sefer Mitzvah, he goes more in depth, and he says the first part of the pasuk says you have to take control of the government of Israel and not leave it in the hands of goyim. It's not enough to say no one lives here. It has to be under Jewish rule. And the second part says that I have to live there. There's a mitzvah in all generations. The Ramban says, quote, "He mitzvat aseh ledorot mitchayev kol echad mimenu v'filu bizman galut." This is a mitzvah in all generations, incumbent upon every individual, even when we're in galut. Okay, I'm pointing that out because soon we're going to see someone say this mitzvah only applies b'imot HaMashiach. According to Ramban, it's quite obvious. He says a mitzvah in every generation, on every individual, to do this. Now, we have to be very aware that this was an impossibility until the formation of the State of Israel. How can I just move into Israel in the 1700s and form a Jewish government? Right? Only when we had an army were we able to, you know, actually fulfill this mitzvah that for generations, the Ramban said, has been incumbent upon us. It was just an impossibility. But with the Jews moving in and pushing the British and the United Nations vote and the British mandate expiring and David Ben-Gurion and the State of Israel being declared on Hey-Er, this mitzvah that we've had upon us since we were kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, it was incumbent upon each and every Jew, was finally something that was now open to every single Jew in the world. Hey, ER of 1948. Now, I showed you that where is this source? The Ramban Sefer HaMitzvot. What should bother you is, why did I go to the Ramban? Who wrote the definitive book on mitzvot? The Rambam, not the Ramban. So why am I quoting the Ramban for you? Why don't I go to the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot? Maimonides. Why don't I go to Nachmanides? So the truth is, I had to go to the Ramban because the Rambam doesn't list it. In fact, everyone agrees, based on the Gemara and Makot, that there are 613 mitzvot, 365 prohibitions, 248 mitzvot ase. What happens afterwards is, what counts as a mitzvah? And you have different lists. And the Rambam made his list. And the Ramban takes issue, I think about 17 different mitzvot. He obviously, they all work from the same source. He says, this is extra, include this. Take this one out, put this in. So what is the Ramban? That's what it says over here. Mitzvah Aseh Dalad. He's going in the order of the Rambam, and he says, you're missing. Over here, you should have the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. So now, great, I brought it for you on the page, where the Rambam says, and I made it, the Ramban says, you see in bold print, as we see it in the Gemara in many places. But why didn't the Rambam write it? The Rambam had the same Gemaras that the Ramban did. Why didn't he write it? This is a question that has bothered Rishonim and Achronim every generation, and people have written on it. Lots of ink has been spilt on this question. Some say he obviously holds it's a mitzvah. As I told you, the Gemaras that I began with, he paskins all of them lahalacha, that I could force my wife to make aliyah, and better to live in a place where there's idol worshippers and live in chutzlars. All the stuff that I quoted in the Gemara Ksuvah is in the Rambam's Mishnah Torah. So why didn't he call it a mitzvah? So some want to say, it's a mitzvah, it's a halacha, it's only derabanan. It's only a mitzvah derabanan to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's problematic. Lots of people take issue with that. We have a source that says in the Gemara, that the mitzvah of living in Israel is equal to all mitzvahs put together. Pretty hard to say mitzvah derabanan is equal to all the Targum mitzvahs put together. So what is the answer? So if you remember, when we went to Sderot, for those of you who had the opportunity, there was a sheet of paper to learn what the Israelis there in the yeshiva. And they quoted this Megillat Esther. Gilat Esther is a commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot. Okay, I don't remember his name right now. He named it Megillat Esther because that was the name of his mother-in-law, and she supported him while he learned and wrote Svarim. So he named it after his mother-in-law, but I can't recall his name right now. The Megillat Esther wrote, very famously, that the reason why, that's what you have on the bottom of the page, the reason why the Rambam didn't write it is because it's not a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah. Why is it not a mitzvah? He says, after Churban Beit HaMikdash, we're now in Galut, and we're not allowed to go back to Eretz Yisrael based on a Gemara that is right here, which I'll read with you in a second, a Gemara in Shu'ot.
So he's saying not only not to go to Israel, but you shouldn't go to Israel?
No mitzvah. And we'll see, he doesn't say necessarily you shouldn't. We'll see another one that says you shouldn't. It says no mitzvah. Look at the source on the first page. It says right before the Megillat Esther. So Gemara Ksuvas, Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Gimul Shvuot Halala Alalu Lama. Three times it says in Megillat Shir HaShirim, Nishpati Etchem Benot Yerushalayim. I made you swear. What are these oaths that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking about? So Gemara gives a drasha and says, Achat Shelo Ya'alu Yisrael B'choma. That's the most important one for us. You're not allowed to go on Aliyah, Shelo Ya'alu B'choma, and conquer Israel. Go up against the fortress. Go up against the fortified land and conquer Eretz Israel. Not allowed to do it. The Achat, second, Shishpi HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Yisrael Shelo Yimredu B'umot Olam. We shouldn't rebel against the Goyim, the nations of the world. And third, V'achat she'ishpi HaKadosh Baruch Hu et ha'ov de'kochavim, God made the nations of the world swear, shelo yishtabu behem b'Yisrael yotam idai, that the Goyim should not overly oppress the Jewish people. Rabbi Yehuda, in Shir HaShirim, says, im ta'iru ve'im ta'oruru k'siv, as it says, unlike until I awaken you. Okay, so what does the Megillat Esther say? Not allowed to go back. Not allowed to force them to take the land of Israel back. And therefore, until Mashiach comes, there is no mitzvah on anyone to make aliyah. And anyone who's not here and wants to turn off the tape and they're listening to the recording, by all means, turn it off now and you can feel really good about yourself. Okay, that's the Megillat Esther. Okay, great. Now, it's very problematic on many different levels. First of all, this Gemara that I just read to you, does it sound like it's a Agarata or a Halacha?
I'm not sure.
What?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So, it's a Agarata. We have no historical record that God took oaths with the Jewish people, with nations of the world. And like, this is a drasha on the Pasuk. What does it mean, Nishpati? Oh, oaths that God made. It's a Agarata. It's teaching me a lesson. Very good. But first thing you should know, there's a Gemara that says, Ein lomdim min agada. We don't learn halacha from agadata. This particular agadata, it's not mentioned anywhere else in the Bavli. It's not mentioned in the Yerushalmi. It's not quoted in any of the halacha svarim that you're familiar with. It's not in the Rambam. It's not in the Rif. It's not in the Rush. It's not in the Tor. It's not in the Shulchan Aruch. So to call it halacha, very difficult to call it halacha. No one thinks it's halacha. It's agarata. One. Two. What was the third oath that I read to you? God made the Goyim swear they wouldn't overly oppress us. Some people pointed out these oaths are interconnected. If everyone's doing their part, you have to honor your oath. Let's say, for example, when I first made Aliyah, I was starving for sports information. There were no computers. So I told the students that I had, you give me sports information, I'll give you an A. I can be bribed. So I'm teaching these girls, they're getting me their boyfriend Sports Illustrated. I said, great, give you an A. They did not give everyone an A, so it didn't really matter. But I got my Sports Illustrated. I felt good. So if they didn't give me a Sports Illustrated, would I be obligated to give them an A? No. I said, you do this, I'll do this. God says to the nations, you don't overly oppress the Jews. If they wouldn't overly oppress us, so then, according to the Agarata, we shouldn't try to take the land of Israel. Pretty much we never had a generation or location where the Goyim didn't overly oppress us. And if that's true, pointed out by many, there would be no obligation on our part to keep any end of the bargain. Okay? That's point number two. Point number three, Shelo Ya'alu means to conquer like Yehoshua did. from Chutz La'aretz to go and conquer Eretz Israel. That's not what happened here. Jews moved in. We were attacked, and we defended ourselves. That's not the same thing as Shelo Ya'alu. In fact, the Vilna Gaon has a very cool idea. Some of the Rishonim say, when we come back for the third time, it'll be like Yehoshua, we'll fight. Others said it'll be like Ezra Nehemiah, where we'll have permission from the nations of the world. Ezra Nehemiah got permission from Koresh, Persian king, to go back and build up the land. And the Vilna Gaon says it's going to be a combination of the two. The Vilna Gaon wrote this about 250 years before it happened. He said, first, we're going to get permission from the nations of the world, then we're still going to have to fight a war. And that is unfortunately what happened. Even without permission, we had to still fight a war. Others also point out, number two here, that we will not rebel against the nations. Once we had the Balfour Declaration, where the British said, we're going to give the land of Israel to the Jews, and it was ratified by the League of Nations, the precursor to the United Nations, we're not rebelling against the nations of the world. They're giving it to us. So therefore, this is not a violation of the three oaths. And on a much more simple reason why the Megillat Esther is wrong, is he said, it's not a mitzvah until the time of Mashiach. The Rambam only lists mitzvot. He like says mitzvot that are applicable, right? So it might not be applicable right now, but it will be applicable. So the Rambam talks about Karbanot. That will be applicable. So if that's true, Rambam should have written down, even in the Yimot HaMashiach, if it's going to be applicable to the Yimot HaMashiach, the Rambam should have written it down. What didn't he write down? Things like a one and done. You know what's a one and done? This is what we had to do when we built the Mishkan in the Midbar. That wasn't listed. Okay, but things that will be a mitzvah b'imot HaMashiach, like Karbanot, that's written. So even according to Megillat Esther, if the Rambam felt it was only going to be a mitzvah in the time of Yimot HaMashiach, it still should have been written down. So I'm going to give you some other answers. The simplest answer is Rav Kook's answer. Rav Kook's answer is, what was the last line of the Gemara? Im ta'iru ve'im toraru k'siv. This is up until there's an awakening. Said Rav Kook, when Zionism borrowed the nationalism that was going around sweeping through Europe and said, we too can be nationalistic. And we'll call it Zionism, and we'll come back to the land of Zion, to Israel. Said Rav Kook, that is the hit or root. That is the awakening. That's exactly what, the Gemara is talking about. Now, how do we understand the Rambam? The Avnei Nezer, we'll start with Rav Herzog. Rav Herzog says, the Rambam only lists mitzvot that are applicable for all times. But not once upon a time and never again. And yet, that's what I told you, he lists mitzvah 187, the mitzvah of fighting the seven nations that conquer Israel, and the mitzvah of fighting Amalek. Now, if the seven nations who conquered Israel are no longer around, it was a one-time thing for Yehoshua, why would the Rambam write it? Must be, says Rav Herzog, that just like Yeshua had to fight to conquer Eretz Israel, there's a mitzvah for all generations to fight and conquer Eretz Israel. Here is the mitzvah. What you're looking for the mitzvah. He's quoting it the way it originally was for Yeshua, and also Amalek. And according to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, any nation whose intention is to destroy us has a din of Amalek, and that's why many people said fighting against Hitler in World War II is a mitzvah, milchamet mitzvah, fighting against Amalek. Now, the Avnei Nezer says it's just a mere technicality and makes so much sense what he's about to tell you. He says, the Rambam tells us in his introduction to Sefer Mitzvot how I determine what makes the cut of 613 and what's not. Because if anyone would sit there and say, let me count up how many mitzvot are on the Torah, we'd all come up with more than 613. So how do I determine what makes it and what doesn't make it? So the Rambam says, my analysis is, I only count the first of two if there's a buddy mitzvah. What's a buddy mitzvah? A leads to B. I only list A. So for example, the Rambam says a mitzvah to build a Beit Mikdash, and says a mitzvah to also build the Aron Kodesh. Because you build a Beit HaMikdash, so you can put in the Aron Kodesh. The Ramban, for example, disagrees. They have two different mitzvahs. Build the Beit HaMikdash, build the Aron Kodesh. Okay? Here as well, says the Avnei Nezer. The Ram says the mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Says the Avnei Nezer, isn't it obvious that step two is that to settle the land? What good is conquering it? Wait, then you pull out? Then what? You have to do it again next week? Isn't it obvious that step two, I don't need to list it. It's the obvious step two. The pasuk that we read. Conquer the land and settle it. Isn't that obviously the buddy mitzvah? Isn't it obvious step two? Therefore, says the Avnei Nezer, there's no need for the Rambam to write the second mitzvah. It's clearly what is expected of us. Okay. And basically, all Rishonim and Achronim understand this way. The Piskei Tshuva says this. He says, Rishonim and Achronim, they all understand both the Rambam and the Ramban as saying there's a mitzvah for all of us. Okay, it's found in Piskei Tshuva, it's found in Chazon Ish. And he says, Piskei Tshuva's quote is, Im kein kol hazmanim shavim v'kiyum ha-mitzvah zo, all the times are the same, v'chein mibu'ar mikol ha-poskim, rishonim v'achronim. And this is the halacha amongst all of the poskim. Rishonim, he doesn't say except for the Rambam. His understanding is how everyone holds. Okay? This is a mitzvah. Now, are there exceptions? So look at the top of the, you know, the next page. Tosos is the exception. Okay? Tosot, in Masechet Ketubot, on the Gemara that I began with, that I just paraphrased, which says the husband can tell his wife, I want to make Aliyah. Tosot says, you see it?
Yeah.
Eino noheg bizman hazeh. This mitzvah is not applicable today. Deika, sakanat rachim, is dangerous. The roads are dangerous to get there. Going on the ship to Eretz Yisrael, it's dangerous. V'haya omer Rabbeinu Chaim, Rabbeinu Chaim, one of the Bali Tosos, said, "The Achshav ain't no mitzvah l'dor be'Eretz Yisrael. Today, it's not a mitzvah to live in Israel. Ki yesh kama mitzvot tatzliot be'aretz. There are certain mitzvot that are dependent upon the land of Israel. V'kama onshin, and there's some punishments. Ein anu yucholim lizaher behem, and we get punished because we don't really know how to keep them. Avlamod alim, and therefore, it seems like Reb Chaim's saying it's too dangerous to live in Israel." Not for physical reasons, spiritual. We all know how to keep the mitzvahs. Okay, do you like these answers?
It's not really dangerous nowadays.
Okay, first thing, as far as the danger, no longer applies. The Piskei Tshuva says, if people would travel to Israel for business, let alone for pleasure, then it's not considered dangerous to get there.
We just said it's not about physical danger.
One second, that was the first answer. Sakanat Drachim.
Okay?
And if you want to say, well, the road's not dangerous, but living in Israel is dangerous, says that Tzitz Eliezer Waldenberg, who died about 10 years ago, who is a huge posek, he was a posek for Shari Tzedek Hasra, we were like 20 different volumes of Shelton Shuvot, Tzitz Eliezer said, that actually would make your mitzvah to live in Israel even stronger, because we have a mitzvah to conquer the land, and therefore the more Jews settling it, the better, as a mitzvah to defend Jews from enemies' attack, Melchamet Mitzvah. So therefore, all the more reason for you to be here and help out. So what about Reb Chaim? What about, well, I can't keep mitzvos here. So this has bothered people so much, they puzzled Rishonim, who came later, Achronim afterwards, so much so, one of the later Rishonim, the Ma'arit, said, I can't believe Reb Chaim, who's quoted in several other places in Tosfos, said such a thing. It makes no sense. I bet it was a student who misquoted him. That's how strange this statement is, that he's already saying, Reb Chaim wouldn't have said that. Must have been a student making a mistake. That's a bold statement to make. Others want to explain and say, what does it mean? You don't know the halachot? So fine, get a sefer and learn the mitzvot leoparat. You're right, you don't know Shemitah? Learn the laws of Shemitah. You don't know Peah? Learn the laws of Peah. Trumas and Maisus? Learn the freaking laws. What's your problem? Okay, go through the sugyas. So the Chida suggested that the issue was, it's not that I don't know the laws of Shemitah, I don't know what year Shemitah is. If I don't know what year Shemitah is, well then maybe I can't ever work the land. Because maybe it's Shemitah. I mean, that was the issue. And then you couldn't live here because you wouldn't be able to work the land. And if so, says the Chida, today the whole world goes by the calculation of the Rambam. And the Rambam was a contemporary of Reb Chaim. It could be Reb Chaim said, we still have a suffix, but by now we're all paskin like the Rambam. And it's no longer a problem. Even that I would find a little problematic. A Shemitah Bizman Azez, the Rabbanan. So what do we say? Out of a suffix, the Rabbanan, we never work the land. That would be a little bit hard to say.
What about Yovel? How come we can't?
Yovel is only when we have the majority of Jews living in their ancestral land of Israel.
Isn't
we don't have that now. What?
There's like 50% of the Jews
in here. Like I said, we might have, not sure, but they also have to be living in their ancestral areas. We need Eliyahu Navi Takei. You're from Sheol Zvulun, live over there. Right. Even if you want to count Reb Chaim in Tosfot, the Chachmas Adam says he is a lone opinion. No one else agrees with him. All the Rishonim and Achronim say there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. So now that we've gotten rid of Reb Chaim of Tosfos, so what's the heter? I mean, for centuries, to live in Chutz Eretz. For centuries, the majority of famous Jews that we are familiar with live in Chutz Eretz. So are they all sinners? Okay, so now I'm going to give you the heterim that are found in the Gemara. Gemara Baba Basra says, and this is probably the number one answer on the board, poverty. You don't have to move to Eretz Israel to die of starvation. Okay, if there's no way for you to support yourself, then there's no chiyah, it's not a suicide mission. And for centuries, Jews would not be able to live here. Nothing really grew here. A bunch of Bedouins that were traveling through here. That's why it's very easiest for us to move in. Right? It wasn't like, you know, there was no one living here. The Piskei Tshuva emphasizes that the Gemara in Baba Basra says, give me one second, that poverty is a heter. Going down in your standard of living is not poverty. You can't say, oh, Chutzaretz, can I have three cars and Israel can only afford one? Well, that's like poverty. That's not called poverty. Right? Chutzaretz, I had a huge house with, you know, five bedrooms. Israel could only afford like a three-room apartment. Oh, that's like poverty. Not true. All right, so he's just pointing that out. But if you want to know what the heter was for all the Rishonim and Achronim that we quote every day when we're learning, you know, morning Seder, it was poverty. What do you want to say?
No, I was thinking that when you said like the Bedouins are just walking past, like, I just realized it's such a big miracle how there was no one living here and we could just move in.
Right.
That in itself.
That's amazing. Next heter. There is a heter for you to live outside of Eretz Yisrael for the sake of learning Torah. When there were no yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, I have to go to Eretz Yisrael and like not have Torah or find a wife. You know, I don't have to go to Eretz Yisrael. And after I've dated both Jewish girls living in Israel, say, all right, I have to pick one of them because I don't have any other choices, right? So no, you're allowed to leave Eretz Israel to find a wife. You're allowed to leave Eretz Israel for the sake of Torah. And when there was a very small community in Israel with not many Jews and not many yeshivas, so that was a legitimate reason for people to live outside of Eretz Israel, to leave Eretz Israel to go to Chutz Laretz. Today, there's certainly more Jewish girls and more learning going on in Israel than anywhere else. But again, it's a personal decision. And if, let's say, for example, I know Rav Aaron Lichtenstein used to send all of his grandsons to go learn by their grandfather, Rav Soloveitchik, NYU. Right? Rav Soloveitchik wasn't in Israel. Is there Torah in Israel? Yeah, but Rav Soloveitchik wasn't in Israel. If, let's say, I don't know, go back a generation. Now there's lots of English speakers around. Let's say I came here single and I went out with like, you know, whatever, the dozen or so English-speaking Americans that made Aliyah like me, and I didn't really find a connection with any of them. I don't have to sit there and try to break my teeth and marry some Israeli. I don't share the same culture. I'm the same. Mention Mickey Mouse. You know, who's that? So I don't know where I'm coming from. So then, I can go back to Chutz Laretz and find a wife, a light-minded wife. But like I said, once again, today, not so sure these heterim apply so much. But basically, the exceptions were if physically or spiritually you would be impoverished, then you're allowed to go to Chutz Lartz. And these were legitimate answers. But
what about income?
So like I said, poverty, yes. Lower standard of living, no. That's what it says. So, okay.
That's kind of why it's so hard for people to come.
Right. What is the reason why people don't come? They're comfortable.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. I am very comfortable here. And moving anywhere is difficult. Even if you just were to uproot and move from, I don't know, New York to Los Angeles, it would be difficult. It's a different climate. It's a different culture. And you don't know anyone there. And when you move to Israel, throw in, it's a different language. Right? So it's difficult. And you're comfortable. And that's why people don't do it. But I ask you, if you were talking to a person about being Shomer Shabbos, and he would say, but I'm comfortable not keeping Shabbos. I've got a good job, and I work on Shabbos. And I'm comfortable. Would any of us say, well, if you're comfortable, okay. So continue being Mechallel Shabbos. Why is it when it comes to Chillul Shabbos, we don't accept I'm comfortable? A guy on Shabbos told me, I was at his house Friday night, that one of his kids lives in Passaic. Okay? Passaic in New Jersey. And spoke to the rabbi about making Aliyah. And the rabbi there said, you shouldn't make Aliyah. Not that it's not a mitzvah. He said, you shouldn't make Aliyah because it'll be harder for you to bring up your kids in Israel than in Chutz Laretz. And you have everything you need right here. Now, I'm wondering. The Vilna Gaon encouraged his students to go to Israel. And between the years 1808 and 1810, over 500 students of the Vilna Gaon came to Eretz Yisrael. At the encouragement of Rav Chaim of Elazhin. Chaim of Elazhin had all these prize students, students of the Gra, students of Rav Chaim of Elazhin, and pushed them to make Aliyah. How come he didn't say, don't do it? It'll be hard to bring up your kids in Israel. And you have everything you need in Elazhin. How come he didn't say everything you need in Elazhin? Going off to a barren land in Israel, there were no yeshivas there. Not only that, he encouraged them to buy land and work the fields. What does that mean? It's better for me. Israel needs you. I mean, this was exactly what the Meraglim said. It's better for us in the Midbar. We're sitting in Kolel. Why should we want to go into Eretz Yisrael and work the ground? But that's what God wanted. So, I don't know. Like, it's very bothersome to me that some rabbi said, no, don't go. It's better for you here. Let's say that's all true. Who cares? It's not where you're supposed to be living. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked, is there a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael like the Ramban says? Or is there no mitzvah today like Reb Chaim in Tosfos? And Rav Moshe Feinstein said that there's a mitzvah like the Ramban, but it's not a mitzvah chiyuvit, obligatory. Rather, it's a mitzvah kiyumit. If you do it, you fulfill a mitzvah. Now, this is problematic. There's a sefer, Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's problematic because I showed you. I put it in bold print. What did the Ramban say? Im kein, hi mitzvah asei lidorot mitchayev kol yochim imenu. The Ramban said explicitly, it's an obligation. So for Rav Moshe Feinstein to say that it's a mitzvah, but it's not obligatory, you just get schar if you do it, well, that's not the words of the Ramban. He asked you, is Allah like the Ramban or Reb Chaim and Tosfos? And he said, like the Ramban, but it's not a chiyuv. Well, then you're not saying it's the Ramban, because the Ramban says it's a chiyuv. Not only that, Rav Avram Shapira, chief rabbi of Israel, said about this tshuva, I mean, what does the word mitzvah mean? What does mitzvah mean? It's a commandment. They're not 613 suggestions. I mean, like, there's a commandment. So, like, how is it okay to just say that, you know, if you do it, it's a mitzvah? So I find it interesting. I taught in Maimonides in Boston. One of my students came over to me once and said, "Oh, Rabbi, got to hear this." One of the rabbis in the high school came over and did that old rabbi trick. We pat him on the back and says, "Oh, where are your tittus?" You know that trick? All right? So, "Oh, where are your tittus? How come you're not wearing tittus?" To which my student responded to him, "How come you don't live in Israel?" And which the rabbi said, "Well, mitzvah to live in Israel is only a mitzvah kiyumit, quarter of Moshe." Now, my student told me this. I told him, "Well, not the way to speak to the rabbi." And I didn't tell him any of this, but if you ask me, what is a mitzvah kiyumit? Tzitzis. There's no chiyuv to put on a four-corner garment. If I have a four-corner garment, then I'm obligated to put on tzitzis. But I'm not obligated to actually even buy a four-corner garment. So if anything is a mitzvah kiyumit, it would be the mitzvah tzitzis. So for this rabbi to say, "Oh, I don't have to live in Israel because living in Israel is a mitzvah kiyumit," I found that very ironic. But again, this is what people tell themselves because, like you said, they're comfortable where they are. That's really what it comes down to. They're just comfortable where they are. And I'll go even further. Let's say Rav Moshe is right. Let's say it's a mitzvah kiyumit. Good. Let's make aliyah because, not because I have to, but because we know that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. Right? And it's what he wants me to do. You're right. Let's say Rav Moshe is right. It's not a chiyuv. It's clearly what God wants. Once a student went before Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and brought all these proofs, trying to explain to him why there's no chiyuv to live in Eretz Israel. And Rav Shlomo Zalman just smiled at him and says, "It doesn't matter what you say to me. You read the Chumash and you'll see it's Ratzon Hashem. Just read the Chumash and you see it's what God wants. So you want to give me all your fancy footwork if it's a kiyumit or a chiyuvit? Like, it's obviously what God wants." Rav Schechter once had this beautiful idea. We know that if an Eved is sold into slavery for stealing, and then at the end of 6 years he says, "I want to stay here." So what do? We nail his ear to the door. And we, why the ear? Says the Gemara, "The ear that heard, thou shalt not steal." So now he says, all the Mepharshim, "What do you mean the ear?" But like, that was 6 years ago. Why are we nailing him to the door now? Because he didn't realize it was a punishment. Now we're nailing his ear because the guy said, "This is great, I like it here." So we nail his ear to the door saying, "Idiot, this is a punishment, you're being punished." Said Rav Schechter, "We Jews in Chutzaretz have to realize living in Chutzaretz is a punishment. And if we don't, if we say, 'I like it here,' what will God do? He'll bring all sorts of holocausts and things like that to remind us that we're in Gullus." Very scary thought. Reish Lakish lived in Eretz Israel. I have the source here, the last source. He's at Rav Moshe's here, and that's the second to last tshuva as well. Reish Lakish is swimming in the Jordan River, and he's trying to get out. It's like climbing up a little bit. And Rabbi Baruch Hanna reaches down, give him his hand. Reish Lakish goes, spits at him. He says, "I don't want your help. You and your ilk, who went to Chutzlaret and never came back, because of you, we had a second Churban Beit HaMikdash." Said Reish Lakish, "Had all the Jews come back when they were supposed to, there never would have been a Churban Beit Sheni. And therefore, you can take your hand, you know we can put your hand. Get at it out of my face." This is what he says. We live in a historic period. That's how I feel. And I feel we're making the same mistake. The Jews stayed in Bava because they were comfortable. The Jews stay in Chutzlaretz now because they're comfortable. In the state of Israel, I always find it interesting when my friends in Chutzlaretz tell me about all the evils of the Israeli government. Your government, they're terrible. They're anti-religious. So come to Israel and vote. If 500,000 Orthodox Jews from America made Aliyah and voted, they could change the government. To sit there in New York and like say, "Oh, what you're doing is wrong." How's that help? We're on the cutting edge of history. I say all the time, when the history books are written, they're not going to be talking about all the kosher restaurants that opened up in the five towns. Jewish history are in here. So, you know, do we want to be spectators or do we want to be participants? So to get back to my original question, you know, can you be a good Jew and live in Chutz Laretz? I find it so interesting. People in this yeshiva, they ask questions about everything. I get questions about, oh, what bracha should I make on this? What about this? Oh, can I do this? How can I keep Yom Tov Sheni? Keep Yom Tov Rishon? I have a house over here. People going to bother Rav Nemetzel, people asking Rav Ami, people asking, how come no one asks, do I have to live in Israel? I know why. They don't want to know the answer. Why would a serious Jew live in Chutz Laretz? If you're serious about mitzvah, why would you live in Chutz Laretz? To me, it's like a no-brainer. And like I said, you want to come up with all sorts of possible heterim, why it might not be a chiv? Go ahead, knock yourself out. Help you sleep at night? Go ahead. But just because you're more comfortable is not really an excuse. We would not accept that for someone who says, I just don't feel like keeping Shabbos. Why are we accepting that for someone who says, I just don't feel like living in Israel? Anyway, thank you very much.